Shadowcast, Episode 18. This week's story, Help Wanted, by Heather Webb. Heather lives in Austin, Texas. She is a mom and a preschool teacher, and she writes in her spare time.
Jack had never been inside a funeral home before, although he had seen them in movies. He had expected a dim, timeless, hushed elegance, redolent of chrysanthemums, roses, and despair. Seated on a scarred wooden chair in Mr. Browsard's cramped and cheaply paneled office, he reflected that the aura here was more of a used car lot than a funeral parlor. Although he might have guessed that from the squat, cinder-blocked exterior of the building, with its peeling gold letters, Browsard's Funeral Home and Memorial Park. From Browsard's office window, there was an excellent view of the cemetery, a dozen acres of tilting tombstones and plump, leering concrete cupids, the back half overgrown with kudzu and weeds, littered with trampled silk flowers, small soiled American flags, deflated balloons like washed-up jellyfish, ribbon tentacles trailing, the deed trees of the dead. Although this was Jack's first time inside Browsard's, he was familiar with the cemetery. He and his friends used to skip school and smoke pot there, lounging against the cool, canted headstones. He had lost his virginity there, with a grim-faced statue of the Blessed Mother of God overseeing the proceedings. Now the unchanged headstones seemed to mock him, just as his youthful high spirits and exuberance must have once mocked them. Jack felt a twinge of nostalgia for those innocent times, when life stretched out before him in an endless and compelling vista of possibilities. It had only been an illusion, of course, but he longed for the illusion. Mr. Browsard leaned across his desk, entwining his long, pale fingers beneath his chin.
Mr. Drizzards.
His voice was dry, thin, and bloodless. It matched the rest of him. Jack, Jack put in quickly. His voice is not yet 30. Mr. Driggers was his father. He hated his father.
Jack.
Brizzard's desiccated smile, which Jack reflected, couldn't possibly offer much solace to mourners.
I appreciate you coming in so late, and on such short notice. I've had a busy few days, and haven't been able to come close to the shop until after 8. Typically, our hours of operation are 10 to 6. Now, when we spoke on the phone, you indicated you were interested in the undertaker's assistant position. The ad in the penny saver, correct?
No, the help wanted sign, Jack replied. On the cemetery gate, I was walking by when I saw it. I thought it was kind of funny.
Funny.
Browsard pronounced the word as if it was foreign, rolling it around in his mouth as if it were an unknown food he was considering spitting out.
Kind of funny. Idiot, why did you say that?
Jack berated himself. Well, you know, he mumbled. Just a help wanted sign on the cemetery gate. It was like the dead were hiring.
Ah,
said Browsard. He turned to the window which overlooked the cemetery and gazed into the night, across the darkened necropolis of tombstones. Then he looked back at Jack.
I didn't put any help wanted sign on the gate, he said.
He gestured toward the window, raising an eyebrow.
You see? No sign.
Jack didn't know how to respond to that. He swallowed and said nothing. There had been a sign. A piece of cardboard, hand-lettered, ragged edge.
I will assume that you were joking,
Browsard stated dismissively.
So, you saw the ad in the penny saver. I am looking for an assistant. My nephew served in this capacity for several years. But now he's left for college out of state, and I find myself once again short-handed.
Jack stared at Bruzard's Undertaker's hands, smooth and hairless, with abnormally long, pale fingers and scrubbed nails. No one could ever accuse Bruzard of being short-handed, he thought. He felt crazy laughter burbling up in his throat, but he managed to squelch it and nod earnestly. He needed a job, any job, badly. Bruzard leaned forward, resting his sharp elbows on his desk, and for a moment, Jack did catch the faintest whiff of funeral flowers, dusty and stale, and an undertone of something sharper, antiseptic. It was the smell of formaldehyde, or some similar preserving agent. He remembered it from when they dissected frogs in high school.
Browsard's is a traditional full-service funeral home, Browsard announced, peering across the desk at Jack. That means we do our own embalming downstairs. We collect the deceased from the hospital, we embalm the deceased, and take care of the burial preparations. We support the grieving family. We assist with the selection of a coffin and a marker. We conduct the memorial service in our chapel. And afterward, he nodded curtly toward the window. So you can see that I need help, he continued. As an undertaker's assistant, your duties will be varied. You'd collect the deceased from the hospital in the van, assist me with the burial preparations, place the deceased in the coffin. You'd set up the chapel, chairs, floral arrangements, tribute cards, attendance book. You would greet mourners and escort them to the chapel. You had arranged the burial equipment, the mats and lowering straps, and store it away in the shed afterward. You'd sometimes be called upon to serve as a pallbearer. You'd be in charge of cleaning the lobby, the parlor, and the chapel, as well as maintaining the van and the hearse. When you say assist in burial preparations, Jack put in nervously, do you mean I'd actually have to help with the, I forgot what you called it. Downstairs? The embalming? Bruzard supplied, offering his chill, crescent smile. The smile seemed almost painful, as if it stretched the scant flesh of his cheeks unnaturally. Embalming requires a state license. I hold that license, but yes, you will assist me with every aspect of my work here. Again, Jack caught a whiff of that formaldehyde frog odor, strong this time. A wave of nausea rolled over him. I need this job. Any job, he reminded himself. I'll get used to it. I can do this. That is, Browsard said archly, if I decide to hire you. He picked up Jack's application from the desk and rattled it slightly in his long fingers. Now, you are 28 years old, Browsard examined the paper, and you grew up here in Richmond. You graduated from Canton High, right across the street. Go Tigers, Jack joked feebly. Indeed, replied Bruzard. You worked a number of years at the Kroger store on Kitterick Avenue. Then you went to work for Shackelford, out at the Red River Mine. My girlfriend was pregnant, Jack put in. My dad worked for Red River for 15 years. I never wanted to work there, but it paid good and I needed the money. It's really not my thing, though. I have asthma. It says here you were laid off in 06. That would have been the first round of layoffs. I assume you collected unemployment for a while? But I guess my question would be, Mr. Driggers. Browsard set the application down on his desktop and smoothed it thoughtfully with the palm of his hand. Where have you been for the past 3 years? Here we go, Jack thought. He could lie, and Browsard might hire him. Maybe he'd even work here long enough to collect a paycheck or two, but sooner or later, Browsard would find out the truth. Richmond wasn't a big town, and then he'd be out on his ass, unemployed again.
Jack took a deep breath. Mr. Bruzard, I was up at Lawrenceville and the correctional center there for 18 months. Before that, I was in county for nearly a year. I got sent up for possession of methamphetamine, when I was 25. That was nearly 3 years ago. I've done my time and I'm clean now. I want a chance to start over and live a decent life. I thought about going somewhere else besides Richmond, but it's the only home I've ever known. So here I am. I've rented a room down on Augusta and Parkway, and I need a job. I'm a hard worker, I've put the bad stuff behind me, and I hope you'll give me a chance. Bruiser looked at Jack for a long time. His face was still as stone, and his unblinking gray eyes appeared glazed over, as if with some sort of film. Jack felt his cheeks grow hot and stared down at his hands.
18 months for possession, Bruiser mused presently. That doesn't make sense.
Well, sir, it's because of the amount. They said possession with intent to distribute. But I wasn't selling, I mean. It was all mine.
I see.
Bruzard rubbed his fingers together contemplatively. They made a raspy, unpleasant sound.
Boy or girl?
I beg pardon, sir?
Your child. You said your girlfriend was pregnant? Do you have a son or a daughter?
Jack blinked as if slapped.
She didn't. She decided not to have it, after all.
His voice broke up stupidly on the last syllable, and he felt a familiar prickling behind his eyes. Why was Bruiser asking him these things? He had better get the job. After being put this dog and pony show, Jack hurried ahead to the conclusion of the story.
I don't know where she is now. I heard she moved to Nashville. My mom and dad are still here in Richmond, but they don't want anything to do with me since I've been out. So I'm on my own, looking for a job, trying to find a way to have a decent life. But it seems like no one's hiring right now. The economy, I guess. I was putting in applications when I passed by here and saw your sign.
As soon as the words were out of his mouth, Jack wished he could retrieve them. He didn't want to offend Bruiser again by mentioning the sign when Bruiser insisted there wasn't one. But Bruiser seemed not to notice. He was staring out the window as if deep in thought.
Well, my boy,
he said finally, clasping his slender hands together.
Let's go downstairs, shall we? I'll introduce you to some of our clients.
He laughed his dry laugh when he took in Jack's bewildered expression.
The deceased, explained Bruiser. I have two bodies down there right now, awaiting preparation.
He unfolded himself like a stick insect, rose to his full height, and came around the desk, placing a bony hand on Jack's shoulder as he passed.
I think you'll do, said Bruiser, but I want to make sure. Follow me, please.
Wordlessly, Jack trailed behind as Bruiser pointed out the trapel, the various storage closets. Everything was old, cheap, and very clean. The smell of dead flowers prevailed here.
The basement is through here, indicating a white painted metal door. I keep it locked for obvious reasons. Now, where is that key?
After rummaging through his pockets, Bruiser decided that he had left the key in his office.
Walk back there with me. This won't take a minute.
As they headed back toward the office, Bruiser turned suddenly to Jack and said,
How do you feel about the dead?
Caught off guard, Jack stammered.
The dead? I mean, I feel fine about them, I guess. I never really known anybody that died.
My grandma died. But it was before I was born. But I'm fine with them.
Not afraid of them, are you?
Asked Bruiser, plucking the ring of keys out of his desk drawer and leading Jack back down the hall. Afraid?
You know, all these movies. Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead, Undead, Zombies. So many young people these days don't treat the deceased with the proper reverence. Bruzard unlocked the white door and ushered Jack down a dim concrete stairway. The formaldehyde smell was strong here, almost overpowering. Beneath it was another smell, darker and more earthy. Death. A tiny pilot light of fear ignited in Jack's sternum. He clutched the cold metal rail, suddenly unable to catch his breath. At the top of the stairs, the metal door swung shut with a dull, final clap. "The dead," Bruzard said, smiling at him through the gloom, "are like dogs." Something wasn't right here. His face, not right. Jack struggled for breath, glancing up at the door at the top of the stairs. Mustn't let Bruzard know anything was wrong. Like dogs? Jack wheezed through narrowed bronchial tubes. He reached toward his back pocket for his inhaler. Didn't feel it. He had left it in Bruzard's office in his jacket. "Yes," Bruzard said. "They sense fear." Bruzard's mouth opened in a soundless laugh, exposing dirt-stained teeth. His eyeballs had shriveled and fallen in the back of his head, leaving only dark, hollow sockets. The smell of formaldehyde and death, which had been emanating from him all along, suddenly overwhelmed Jack. Panicked and unable to catch his breath, he made a dash for the door, but he lost his footing on the stairs. The last thing Jack heard was the dead croak of an answering laugh, and a soft, secretive shuffling, like the rustling of dry leaves from the foot of the stairs. And then he didn't hear anything else, because the floor was coming up so fast and hard to meet him.
Death. It's a word we all have some sort of thought on as soon as it's uttered. We fear death because of the loss, because of the pain, and perhaps because we don't know what comes next. Some also look forward to it because either life is so terrible for them here, or because they do know, or think they know, what's on the other side and can't wait to embrace it. But even those who long for it, fear it, and will fight against it on some level. So the question is, how do you feel about the dead? Are they still forever? Or will they rise? What lays in wait for us on the other side? Is it your greatest fears come to life, or the shining gates of your dreams? Only time will tell. But while we wait, we can, and should, speculate on it. If for no other reason than it's fun to feel the fear. Particularly, I think, when it's created inside your own head. So do this. Tonight, while you lie in bed, waiting for sleep, ask yourself, do I fear the dead? And once you have your answer, imagine your pulse slowing, 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 until it hardly beats at all. And just as you drift off, imagine a cold, clammy hand running itself over the top of your foot, grabbing hold and pulling. Then you will have experienced a dream I had, and still remember vividly from when I was 9 years old. Ah, I'm just messing with you. There's nothing to fear. We're all safe and sound. Snug as a bug, as they say. Just remember to check under the bed before you shut off the light. Okay, I'm going to indulge in a little shameless self-promotion, just for a minute. Some of you know I recently made my first sale as an author. My story, Once Seen, a Lovecraftian mythos tale, was picked up and published in the Masters of Horror anthology, which came out in digital format a couple of weeks ago. There are links provided on the Shadowcast blog as to where you can get the EPUB version for only $2 from Smashwords. I hope you'll check it out. The print version of the book comes out the last week of April, and I've had a few people ask me about ordering a signed copy. First of all, it would be an honor to do so. But here's how it's going to work. I have to order the books, have them shipped to me, and then I can sign and mail them out. In order to do that, I'm going to need to know who all wants one. I'm going to have 1 week to order the book the week of April 3rd. So if you're interested, please go to the Shadowcast blog and leave me a message in the comments, or message me on Facebook or Twitter so I can get a count. I must say I've been overwhelmed by the support you guys have given me, not only for the podcast, but in my publishing ventures as well. So, thank you. As always, if you've enjoyed today's story, tell someone about it, add us to your blog roll, or leave us a review on iTunes. I never tire of seeing what you guys think of the show. I also invite you to consider leaving a donation to help with the server costs. Every little bit helps. I'd like to thank The Contrarian for today's opening theme and Christopher Carlson for the background music. This episode was released on a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Thanks for listening. Stay well.